All right. Welcome to Season 3, Episode 6, also known as Episode 78 of the Retro Game Club podcast. I'm Hugh, and joining me is someone who misunderstood the news and is currently scalping Wendy's kids' meals, Rob.
Yeah. Apparently, Frosties don't hold well.
Well, if you leave them outside, they do.
Yeah, they don't. Oh, yeah, because it's 0 degrees, and this winter will never end.
Yeah, I mean, it's only mid-February, so we got some time.
Yeah.
But it... Yes, Chicago today, it is 0 degrees and snowing, a combination that should not be allowed in nature.
I think the last 2 years we had really mild winters, so I think I just got used to that. I thought global warming had done its thing, but I was wrong.
And we just aren't going to have winter. It's just grow bananas in Detroit or whatever.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, so, yeah, what have you been up to?
Well, I'm still playing East 9. Mm-hmm. I don't really know how far along I am, but I don't know. Probably not halfway. Who knows? But kind of like at the risk of repeating myself, like in East 9, it has a lot of optional quests, and their definition of optional quest is completely absurd compared to previous games because it seems like really major important parts of the story occur in optional quests. And optional quests are all missable. Like, the game has a main story, and the quest will pop up, and it'll tell you whether you have, like, a short amount of time to do that quest or a long amount of time to do it. And if you don't do the short quests early, then you miss them. And again, some of those have, like, huge plot points. Like, it's kind of a weird decision they made. It's very different than the previous games in that regard.
Can I touch on that for a minute?
Yeah.
So, I just entered the last chapter. I've been playing it a lot. I love it. Gameplay clicked with me. All my complaints from last episode are gone, other than what you said. So for people who haven't played it, this is no spoiler, but there's the main plot where you have to go to certain places, and the map tells you where those are. It's not a secret, you know? And then you have these, I'm using air quotes, side quests that they tell you early on, like you said, like there's long, you know, you have a short period of time for these quests. Some you could wait a little bit. What they don't tell you is that the quests are per chapter. And so that main part, what I just talked about, that'll end your chapter once you go to that area. They don't explain that. So chapter two, I just thought, you know what? I'm just going to go to the next chapter and take care of a bunch of quests there. So I missed all the side quests in chapter two, which one of them is someone you get at your, I'll call it your home base so I don't give any spoilers, that lets you buy all the materials you need for items. And I think I missed it, because if that's late in the story and I'm in the last chapter, then it's a missed opportunity. But yeah, so it's hard for me to get materials now in order to build stuff I need.
Yeah, so they're... Okay, so I don't want to like get into too deep with the game, but there are two other places where you can buy... Two other ways you can buy materials. I think you actually missed... If it's chapter two, you missed the person that sets up like the trading post, which is... This is all like... If you played East 8, it's kind of a similar mechanic where, you know, people join your hideout and then they... You know, provide, either they sell a specific type of item or assist you in some way. But there's a couple other places you can end up buying materials in the game. But it's it's like a huge, if you miss that, because the character that I think you missed also like crafts accessories that you can't find anywhere else.
It's the person I missed is not a person. It's a non-human that lives under the stairs.
Oh, that yeah. I got that person. And, You're right. That would be a painful one to miss.
It is.
That would be...
I think it's the only big one I missed.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be hard if you miss that one, because I don't think... There's, like, one other spot where you can trade, like, you know, these random, not money, but, like, shards for items. Mm-hmm. Or I think I got you can that. Maybe get some things. Yeah. Well, you have to. Like, I don't think that is missable.
Okay. Okay.
But this character, yeah, the character you're talking about is pretty helpful. So.
Yes.
But yeah, you can just miss like really important characters. Like, oops.
Yeah.
Just gone.
Yeah. I mean, I guess it gives it replayability, but it's a long game.
Yeah, I'm getting that impression. I mean, I think maybe part of it is they realize that speedrunning is a good way to advertise a game because mm-hmm. people like to watch speedruns. So the more of the story that you make optional, the easier you make the game for speedrunning.
Yeah, I definitely see that. Yeah.
But my only other observation is there's a little bit of like a GTA feel to it because, you know, a whole lot of it is just, you know, exploring a town and just finding arbitrary items.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Which is, you know, that's pretty much Grand Theft Auto in a nutshell.
It's funny that this takes place in a town because, like all other East games, it has an incredible soundtrack. In fact, it might have, I think, the best soundtrack out of all East games. But since you're in a town for most of the game, at least the first three quarters of the game, you get a lot of town and safe village music. A lot of it.
There is, yeah, because the music changes in different parts of town, which I thought was pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that's about all I've been playing. Oh, and I watched this really awesome video. I guess someone posted it on our Facebook page, too, which I was not aware of. But this...
I posted editing.
You put it there?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, well, thank you. Yeah, it is Beavis and Butthead dialogue dubbed into the Legend of Zelda cartoon.
It's flawless.
It's perfect, yeah. It's amazing how well it works. So I declare it as the best thing I've watched all quarantine, which should give you an idea of what kind of garbage I've watched.
It's so funny. It's so perfect. I hope it does not get taken down.
Yeah, there's two different media conglomerates that could decide to take it down.
Yeah, I hope they just realize it's perfect and perfect advertising for each of them.
But does Nintendo actually own the rights to their cartoon?
They must.
Yeah. Hey, so that's it for me. What have you been up to?
Exact same stuff as you. Right. East 9, shoveling snow. That's about it. I did take 2 days off, a Friday and a Monday, to play East 9. That's why I'm a bit further than you. And it is the first time off I've taken since July 4th. So
okay.
It was... And until recently, until January... My kids were home part-time, so it was, even if I had a day off, I would still be watching kids. So
yeah.
This now, with no kids at home, those 2 days, it was just, like, the best days of my life.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I mean, over here, my kids are still home full-time, so I guess fall is what we will be shooting for here.
Yeah, but they're a little older than mine, so they could kind of entertain themselves at least.
Yeah, yeah. Definitely they could, yes.
They could. Yeah, they have the ability to.
Yeah, no, they pretty much do. They've been playing a lot of video games, and not to get way off topic, but they play games, they talk to friends, all the usual stuff. But every now and then they get bored and it results in something horrific happening in the house.
Yeah, I could imagine. I think out of all of our recent episodes, maybe call it the last 20 episodes, I'm just picking a number out of the air. I think our news items this week, I think we have the least amount of like garbage throwaway topics in a long time. So I'm pretty excited about this episode.
Yeah, I only see a couple things that seem throwaway, so that's good.
Yeah, yeah. Should we want to dive in?
Yeah, first one is not a throwaway item at all, man. This is the Polycade wall-mounted arcade. So this is my only trepidation with this is it's a Indiegogo project, and I inherently don't trust Indiegogo projects. Mm-hmm. but the team behind it seems kind of competent. I don't know why they put it on Indiegogo versus Kickstarter, but it's a, yeah, it's a, exactly what it says. It's a arcade cabinet that you attach to your wall for safe, you know, so it can be like whatever height you want. And, that's it.
Yeah. It's, there's a lot of different models with this. So if you don't read carefully, this is a pay-to-play option. So you're connecting to their server to download games, which could throw some people off. I don't know if they just don't advertise that you could put your own games in there or something. But it's a Windows PC inside of this thing with a 27-inch monitor that is a very fast, or I guess a very low latency rate. So that's great for gaming with a pretty powerful CPU and GPU and a big enough hard drive. And it goes up in price pretty quickly, but there's also just a little SNES-looking controller that you could buy for pretty cheap that connects, I think, wirelessly to your laptop or smart TV that you could connect to their service to and download games to your little device there, little controller. So seems like they put a lot of thought into this, and it looks pretty neat.
Yeah, and it's a Windows PC, so like they even say in the description, you can run Steam, you can run good old games on it. So even if they have like their own proprietary store that maybe seems sketchy, you can connect to Steam, right? And assuming the PC inside is powerful enough, you know, you can, I didn't look at the specs of what they're actually putting inside there. I feel like this is more about the aesthetics than the, totally, you know, than the actual horsepower. But again, if it's a PC, that means you can upgrade it too. So I don't know. I didn't look at all the options, but if you could just buy like the bare unit and you provide everything else yourself, like that's not so bad.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Yeah. Yeah. So I hope to see some reviews on that soon.
Yeah. Yeah. I could put one of these in the bathroom or wherever I have open wall space right now.
It kind of does look a little bit like a urinal. It's like a reverse.
It sort of does. Yeah. Yeah. The Crackle, which is like Netflix, but free and with commercials, is going to have a Nintendo documentary. I assume an unauthorized Nintendo documentary.
I'm not sure because it features Sean Astin, Will Wheaton, Allison Hayslip. Who else we got? Nolan Bushnell, Tom Kalinske. A lot of people. Reggie is in there.
None of those people have ever worked for Nintendo. Oh, but here we go. Reggie Fils and me will be in there. There you go. That's one person. That's why I'm like, I mean, I'm sure it's a good documentary. I just doubt Nintendo was involved.
And it's a multi-part. So, starts March 1st. Yeah, I'm excited for that. Mm. Crackle actually isn't a bad service at all because it's free. It's free. It's hard to complain about.
Yeah, and it works basically like, it's not like Pluto TV. You know, Pluto TV is sort of like streaming antenna TV.
It's like a, yeah, it's like a flash player almost.
Yeah, because you have a lot of, so you have stations. Like, you're scrolling through different stations, and sometimes the stations are just like one show. But Crackle is kind of the same interface as Netflix, but you have commercials. If no one's ever played with it. There's occasionally some good old movies and shows on there.
One strange thing that confused me is, this is on IGN. In the middle, almost in the beginning of this article, there's a video that has nothing to do with the article, but I watched it. It's this really good video about how this businessman in Sweden got all the Nintendo rights in the 80s to distribute in at least Sweden. It might be other countries too, but it's a 19-minute video that, hey, if you look up this article on IGN, check out the video too. I learned something there.
What is next here? NES Famicom Anthology. So this is a new book.
Yeah, and I guess it's the most exhaustive book on the topic. So it looks really nice and hardcover. I looked. It's not available on Kindle or anything like that yet. But it's a hefty price. But, I mean, this thing really looks like it is missing nothing. I mean, there's 1,400 games in it. It does everything from Famicom to NES to the disk system. 550 pages. So, yeah, it looks nice.
Yeah, yeah, a lot of photos and screenshots and stuff. Hopefully not just lifted off my website. I haven't looked yet.
I don't think so. And I thought of that too. And I looked this guy up on Amazon because I was just going to see if there was a Kindle edition I could get. And he has a bunch of books like this, like the N64, the GameCube. Mm-hmm. So this might be a good person to try to interview.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So that's on Nintendo Life. We have another Nintendo Life article. Pixel FX N64 Digital promises crystal clear HDMI video for your Nintendo 64.
All right. So this is another Nintendo 64 upscaler.
Yeah, but it looks like this connects to the motherboard. I looked and there wasn't any really good pictures yet other than it looked like a daughter board. So I assume this doesn't just connect to the back of your computer. Oh, yeah, it has to be because it's a simple firmware updates via Wi-Fi. So it must be pretty extensive. But
yeah, I was looking at their, they have like Twitter accounts and stuff. I was hoping maybe they had a picture there, but I don't see anything yet. I have like two backup Nintendo 64s. So if there was a project that required butchering a Nintendo 64, maybe I would be okay with that. There was some period of time when I was just finding like Nintendo 64s at yard sales all the time.
What do you have any different colors or are they all the gray?
No, my main one is the one I actually, you know, bought back in the day, which is the clear green Donkey Kong Country transparent one. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And then the other two I think are both just the plain classic black.
Nice.
One of them I will probably hack away at a little bit so it can fit Japanese cartridges.
There's no adapter for that?
There is. Yeah. Just, you know, I got three of these things laying around, man.
True. Yeah. That's funny.
I guess I could throw it out.
No. Sega Dreamcast. Sega as a, I guess, a console company died 20 years ago this week.
Yeah. So that means 20 years ago is when I bought my Dreamcast, because I bought it the day I read the news that it was being discontinued, because I think they also like cut the price drastically the day they discontinued it.
I know, so I've said this on this show many times. I got my Dreamcast for $35 new from Toys R Us around this time.
I don't know if I paid a whole lot more than that.
Just an incredible
deal. I just figured, yeah, might as well get one now. There's a few, like, I like arcade conversions, and I guess on the Dreamcast they're barely even conversions, right? Mm-hmm. They're basically the full arcade game, so why not? And the Dreamcast is another one I have a bunch of spares sitting around.
Yeah, me too. I have the one that I hack up as well, where I have the GDEMU and all that stuff in it. I think this one was one you posted.
So Atari Age just posted about a new Atari Jaguar development studio called Jag Studio. It's free download, and it's just a bunch of stuff. And it's got sample programs and, you know, tutorials and then tools to help make, coding a Jaguar game easier.
Well, yeah, you don't have to do assembler, right?
Some of their examples are assembler, but they also have BASIC and C compilers. So you can write in something else. But yeah, the first examples they had were all, you know, again, because the Jaguar is running the same CPU as the Genesis, it was all 68,000 assembler examples.
Mm-hmm. Very cool. Yeah, I hope this leads to some new games, new projects.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Jaguar is a pretty... It has a pretty vibrant homebrew scene, mostly because no one's going to ever like send you a takedown letter or anything. but also because, yeah, it's really easy to work with, I guess, because the core CPU, again, is just it's not that different than running a Genesis game. Mm-hmm. But if you want to use the extra hardware, then it gets more complicated. But most people that are doing homebrew Jaguar games are doing pretty simple things. Mm-hmm.
I don't even own a Jaguar. I don't think I've ever even touched one. Yeah, I don't think I've ever played one.
Oh, okay. I mean, it's a neat system. I have well, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 8 or 9 games for it. Mm-hmm. And some of them are good. Most of them are not.
Yeah. Do you have a Jaguar
did you,
CD?
I mean, did you watch the tape that's up at Hartford Games now? The Atari Jaguar Do the Math 45-minute promo tape?
Oh, yes. I've seen that.
So it gives you an idea. Like, Doom's pretty good on it. I know it's missing music, but maybe you don't play Doom with music anyways. And Wolfenstein's kind of good. And Tempest 2000's pretty good. Rayman is good. But then...
Alien vs. Predator, right? That's Alien, supposed to be good.
Alien vs. Predator is pretty good, yeah. And it's a pretty big drop-off after that. There's not a lot of mid-range in the Jaguar. It's a system that has a very small number of, like, great games, and then a whole heap of just disasters.
Was that you that told me that Rayman started... Rayman started on Jaguar, right?
Yeah. Or am I getting the first wrong? Rayman. Yeah. I have it. That's, it's, you know, Rayman, it's, like, graphically really nice. Not super into it, but I'll admit that it's a good game.
Yeah, yeah. It'll be a game club game one day.
Yeah, oh, absolutely, yeah. Yeah. But then you get, like, White Men Can't Jump, which is possibly the worst basketball game ever written.
I didn't even know that was a game.
It is, yes, based on the movie. It is like a 2-on-2 basketball game, so I know you're thinking it must be like NBA Jam. It is not. All right.
Wow.
Yeah. If you have to switch online, there's some new games, and I have heard of none of these, and I thought I heard of everything.
Okay, I'm glad I'm not alone. I heard, well, there's one new NES game that I did hear of, Fire and Ice.
Yeah, Fire and Ice I've heard of, but unfortunately, I couldn't tell you what genre Fire and Ice is.
I had to watch a video to know that, and it's like a puzzle platformer where you have ice. You're like an ice wizard, and you have to put out fire to get past it. And so if you have two like ice blocks next to each other, you could break one of those and the other one will fall on the fire kind of thing. Looks kind of fun. What are these other ones?
So Doomsday Warrior, I'm looking at a video. It looks like Double Dragon 5.
Yes.
If you told me that the same team that wrote this wrote Double Dragon 5, I'm not surprised at all. There's Prehistoric Man, which is like Chuck Rock meets Legendary Axe.
It actually looks pretty good.
I think I'm actually going to play this, yeah.
Prehistoric with a K, by the way.
Well, yeah, it was the 90s. We like to do that. And then this other one, Psycho Dream. This side-scrolling ninja-type game.
Yeah, it kind of looks like a TurboGrafx game. Doesn't look too bad.
Yeah, a little bit of a ninja spirit, a little bit shinobi maybe.
Yeah, not too bad.
I mean, for free, why not? And Fire and Ice looks like Solomon's Key. It's probably the sequel to Solomon's Key. Someone's going to write in and tell me that. It looks a lot like Solomon's Key.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's not too bad for, hey, if you have a Switch, you probably have the service, so play some retro games.
Yes, I mostly have it for I mostly buy that for like to play Zelda once in a while or really for save game backup. Like it's stupid, yeah. But you know, that's the only way you can get it there. Yeah, so this is another project that is going to get shut down article, right? So it's Super Mario 64 ported to PC with ray tracing.
So good. Have you watched this video?
No, I looked at the screenshots though.
Oh, wow. I mean, just watching it, there is a video link below. Is seeing this in motion. I mean, I how did they do this? First of all, like, how do you port to PC? Do you just?
I assume it's an emulator. It's an emulator with some. So you probably start with a Nintendo 64 emulator, and then you rewrite the graphics, you know, out to PC part. It's way more complicated than what I'm describing, but that's how I would start.
But yeah, I mean, they did not update the, you know, the texture maps or anything, but still, just this one little update really changed how the game looks. It's very impressive. So I love that people keep doing stuff like this. Just keep, I mean, they should have used this for the Mario 3D All-Stars.
Let's see what else here. The PlayStation, the PSP emulator, PPSSPP, has a new version. And what are some of the new things in this?
So, yeah, a lot of new updates. One of the biggest one is that it can use your microphone. I actually didn't know that PSP had games that needed the microphone like the DS does. It fixes a bunch of other games like Crazy Taxi and the Spider-Man game and Namco Museum and a few others. And just a lot of quality of life fixes. And I guess it works much better on Android 11 now. And, you know, I should say that this emulator is to emulate a PSP on your computer or Android device or something like that. This is not an emulator on a PSP, you know, so just didn't want people to be confused about that.
Right. So there is I don't think the PSP has a microphone. I think it's an attachment. I think it was a thing you could buy and add on to the PSP. Vita, of course, has a microphone because like Zoom was what, not Zoom. What was the thing that we used before Zoom? Skype. That's it. There is Skype for the Vita.
That's so right.
It must have a microphone. Unless I just was using a headset, but I was actually, I have used the Vita to make Skype calls before because it's convenient. As you know, before the show, I couldn't get Audacity to use the microphone. The nice thing about like apps like Skype or Zoom on a console is it's going to work. Like it's not going to be, wait, hold on, let me go into my audio mapper and do some stuff.
No. Yeah.
It's just going to work because there's only one piece of hardware it has to support. But anyways, things that use, there are a couple games that apparently supported the microphone. Which this is new to me. I mean, I've talked quite a bit about how much I enjoy the PSP and did not know that there was a mic for it because I would never have used it. So it's, I guess that makes sense.
Emulating the PSP works surprisingly well, especially if you want to up-res your games, just make them look better. It translates really well to, you know, a computer screen and isn't really laggy at all. And there's just such a great library for the system, you know?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, we talk about these games a lot, but, like, there are three really solid East games on PSP. Well, four, really.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really where I rediscovered the East series. You know, there is a good decade where I didn't play any East games, you know, until I got a PSP and realized, like, on their eShop or whatever, I guess PlayStation Store, that I could just buy two or three of them.
All right. And then we have a couple Mario articles here. Super Mario soundtrack getting high quality remaster. Is this official or is this another, this project?
It's from the Giga Leak.
Oh, well, that's okay.
So it's funny to talk about chiptunes in a remaster, but the SNES allowed for digital samples in the games, which Super Mario World used a lot of. And unfortunately, to fit on the cartridge, they had to compress the heck out of these little samples. But in the Giga Leak, there were the uncompressed samples. So someone put together with MIDI these sounds again. So it sounds pretty good. And I'm sure you'll see a ROM hack soon with this in it.
Yeah. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah. So I guess some good stuff's coming out of that Giga Leak. And keeping with the Mario music segment, Super Mario 64's intro's classic Donkey Kong Easter egg discovered. Did you get a chance to go through this one at all?
I did not. Did this get posted late? Because I feel like I didn't see this at all.
So, yeah. So, this one kind of sounds like a lame article, but it's not. So, some musician, I can't pronounce her name, but if you read this article, you will see it. Went through and arranged, I guess, in a MIDI sequencer or something, the Mario 64 intro theme. you know, where the game starts outside the castle, and, you know, the Lakitu or whatever the camera guy's name is looping around, that whole sequence. Well, that music, if you take the main part of it and you cut it in half and lower it down an octave, it is the exact music from the original Donkey Kong in the arcade. And I thought that was really interesting because I've heard both of those, you know, soundtracks hundreds, if not thousands of times, and I've never put that together. And so it's a nice little Easter egg that the composer to Mario 64 introed with.
Yeah.
It took 25 years for someone to realize that. We got some non-Sonic game news. He's getting a new Netflix show called Sonic Prime in 2022.
That's an odd name for being on Netflix.
I didn't put that together. That's funny.
Yeah, that should really be an Amazon show.
But it's going to be 24 episodes, and it's going to be a family-friendly show. I guess it's going to be a lot like that. It's going to be a multiverse-type show. So should be pretty interesting. I've watched that Sonic Boom show, the newest one, with my kid a little bit, and it's pretty good. I think that one's on Hulu.
All right. I've never seen any Sonic TV show, I don't believe.
If you're not watching it with a young kid, there's really no point to watch it. It's not like you're going to watch it and be riveted with it.
Okay.
So you're not missing much. But have you seen the Sonic movie?
I still have not, no. I think that's coming to some service I subscribe to soon, though.
Okay, good. Yeah, it. You should watch it. It's surprisingly good.
Yeah, I would definitely like to watch it. I have no objection to seeing the Sonic movie. I just haven't.
It's way better than it should be. But this next item is they begin shooting the sequel to it pretty soon. So look forward to that probably in 2022 also. And I'm not surprised that movie made a lot of money. Did you ever watch that Detective Pikachu movie?
I don't even know that I've heard of that.
Okay, there's a Detective Pikachu movie where Ryan Reynolds voices Pikachu.
Okay.
It should be... I kind of lump Cobra Kai and Detective Pikachu in the same bucket where there's really never been some things that are a horrible idea that should just not work that are absolutely fantastic. So, now, yeah, this Detective Pikachu movie I would also suggest as well. It's much better than it should be.
Yeah, so, like, I didn't like the premise of Cobra Kai. That's why I never watched it. I thought they should have, like... When I heard that this show called Cobra Kai was going to exist, I thought what would be much better is if the Ralph Macchio character... What's his character's name?
Danielson,
thank you. If, like... He sort of peaked at, like, you know, high school. Like, he was one of those people. Like, he kind of peaked at high school, and he's been, like, battling alcoholism and homelessness and stuff for a few years. Meanwhile, the Cobra Kai guy, what's his name?
Johnny.
Yeah, like, he's had a different arc. You know, he came from some kind of bad household, but, you know, I had this sort of horrible mentor. But he's gotten his life together, and now he's helping Ralph Macchio's character through life.
Yeah,
that's a story arc you should do, but not like they're perpetually trapped in the personalities they had in high school.
It's different than that, though. You should definitely give it a chance. The first two episodes are hard to get through. They're not great, but after that, it becomes fantastic. There are elements of what you're talking about, though. They do flip it a few times.
Okay.
So, highly recommend all those things we just talked about.
And hopefully you cannot hear the very loud snow removal device going on right outside my window for some reason.
No, I cannot.
Okay.
There's going to be Sonic Lego toys.
I like that. Yeah.
That's it. That's the story. They look kind of neat. I guess the first one is Green Hill Zone. And there's a little Mecha Eggman there. When does this get released? I don't see a release date. Or I looked this morning. I did not see it on Amazon.
Yeah, now is it Lego? It is actual Lego. Okay. It's not like Mario, it had a line of toys, you know, of us. Things you assemble yourself that looked like this that weren't Lego branded, but these are Lego branded.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And yeah, Mario does have Lego branded stuff.
Yeah, it does now. I was thinking back in the day it had. Oh, not some competitor to Lego.
I don't know what that would be.
I don't know, but the sets didn't look that great. Let's see. And then we're going to close up with a couple DuckTales stories. Alternate ending to DuckTales where Scrooge has a change of heart and gives away all his money.
Yeah, because family and friends are all that he needed. Not a very Scrooge McDuck thing to do, though.
Mm-hmm. Also something that never happens in real life either.
No, but and then a long Kotaku story. Behind the scenes at the making of the DuckTales on NES. And he just interviews the producer, I think, of the game, who also worked on Dragon's Lair and a few other games.
All right.
And he talks about it.
I didn't read it all yet.
Yeah. It's a long, very good article. But it talks about the Capcom team in Japan working with the Disney team, and then the American who's actually in charge of producing it, and just kind of being in between of all those teams, and how the game came together, and just how it really just worked out really well. Everyone was on the same page, and I don't really like this word, but it seems like a lot of synergy was happening. So very cool, and everyone knows it's one of my all-time favorite games, so I always like to report on it.
Yeah.
And one thing a lot of people don't realize is that DuckTales, I think even before the cartoons came out, the original ones, has a very extensive comic book series for DuckTales and just Scrooge McDuck. So that's where a lot of the stuff comes from. So I don't know if we have any fans of those comics out there. That is the news.
All right. Want to talk about some of our picks this week? Our game picks?
Yeah, you want to go first this time?
Yeah, it's good because I did not get a chance to play the other game because my kid stole the cartridge from me. I played Doodle World. You know, we talked to Nate, who designed this game and coded it about a year ago, maybe? Something in the vicinity?
Not even, yeah.
So this was a Kickstarter game. And it's a platform game. I actually played this with my youngest kid because it's pretty accessible. Like you don't have to be like an expert at platformer games. As the game progresses, some of the stages get a little bit harder. But up front, it's pretty easy to get started with. And it's a lot of fun. So you're playing as the I guess your character is like a notebook, and everything again is very like hand-drawn themed, you know, so you're playing against a notebook back, like everything's drawn on notebook paper, and your enemies are like, you know, erasers and thumbtacks and so on. And some enemies you can jump on, other enemies, you know, you will die if you jump on them. It's pretty easy to tell which ones are which. The things that are pointy on top, of course, are going to kill you. And, everything else is safe. And then you collect, you collect crayons, you get 100 crayons, you get an extra life. There's little bonus stages where you can collect even more. So there's, you can rack up, 7 or 8 extra lives pretty quickly in the game, which you will need because when you get to like the later stages, there aren't bonus rooms anymore. Right. Just to add a little extra challenge. It has an interest like speed running. Like you can get through the game. I think you can get through the game without ever pressing the run button. I think Zach left a note on there to that effect too, that the run button doesn't, it doesn't seem like you need the run button to make any jumps or anything, but the game is a lot faster when you're running. So if someone wanted to pick up like, speed running this, I think that's really what it's for. Mm-hmm. I think it lets you get through the game a lot faster if you want to encourage speed running in your game. So that's it's cool. I really have enjoyed it. You know, so I got the box copy and all that, and played in the top loader NES. I believe it works in every model NES. I can confirm for sure it works in the top loader. Yeah, really, really like it. I hope it makes it onto some, you know, some compilations and whatnot in the future too.
Yeah, absolutely. I played it on the AVS, the FPGA NES I have, and it worked great. And I played it with my almost five-year-old. It has a kids mode, which is great, where you don't have any big pits and you get more extra lives. And yeah, we both enjoyed the heck out of it. And I'd say, you know, we played it for a good 3 hours and just passed the controller back and forth. And yeah, it's a very Mario-like game that is just pretty charming and well done and great music.
Yeah, I forgot about the music is good. Yeah, and if you bought a Kickstarter version, I guess you have the soundtrack too. And I did not try the kids mode. I mean, it's not a particularly hard game. I mean, the places I died tend to be either I was trying to, you know, I was just trying to see how fast I could get through a level, or I didn't recognize right away that you couldn't jump on something.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. There's no games with kids mode, so I really, you know, I really hope playing this with my kid because, you know, kids that young just want to explore. You know, they're not trying to get through the level. They're just trying to run around. You know what I mean? So it really did help. But yeah, nothing but good things to say about this. I'm so glad it's in my collection.
Now I'm thinking if I do another game demo, I'll add like a speedrunner's mode where, you know, you can just like go directly to the ending. Like a 0% complete.
Nice. Yeah, that's a good idea.
I should find a way to do a 0% speed run in the next demo I do.
Should we move on to mine?
Yeah, yeah.
So I did Super Mario Sunshine because this winter will not end and I want it to be spring. And it's one of the few Mario 3D Mario games I've never played, and now I have. I did not complete it, but I will. Let me back up there. So the premise of this game, it's kind of the sequel to Mario 64, and you and Peach and the gang are flying to the island Delfino for a little R&R, and there's a Shadow Mario there that is putting graffiti everywhere and kind of makes the sun go away a little bit, and everyone's upset at Mario, so they trap you on the island until you clean everything up, and I'm going to do some spoilers here because it's a 19-year-old game. So if you don't want any Mario Sunshine and spoilers, please fast forward like 2 or 3 minutes. And that was your chance to do so. So after a while, you figure out that Shadow Mario is actually Bowser Jr., where he steals the princess because Bowser lied to him and said that Peach was his mom. Isn't that insane? So
that's pretty insane.
Yeah, it's just a crazy story. And so in order to get to the last level, you need to beat, there's like, I don't know, 6 or 7 or 8 different levels you go into. And just like in Mario 64, and one of the last, I guess instead of stars, you get suns. Suns you get in each level is you have to catch Shadow Mario. So you have to catch him in all levels in order to get to the last level where I'm assuming you fight Bowser. But I'm almost there. You need 50 suns to get to that. But I mean, there's a lot of optional suns. And obviously, that's the least amount of suns you could get while getting all the Shadow Marios. So I have 54 right now, but I need one more Shadow Mario. Anyway, the catch to this game is you have this device, Flood, F-L-U-D-D, which is Flash Liquidizing Ultra Dousing Device. And it's just a hose, but it could also get different nozzles that make you fly around, that make you run fast, that make you shoot up like a rocket. And it has some cool dynamics. I enjoy just the regular nozzle the best, like running around and cleaning stuff up. There's also Yoshi in this game where he needs to eat fruit, which fills up his juice meter. And so if you keep eating fruit, he can keep going. If not, he falls asleep or disappears or something. He cannot go in deep water. So if you fall in water, he disappears. And I don't know if you need him for it. Yeah, you need him for at least one puzzle. But I always heard this was the worst Mario game, at least in the 3D series. Hmm. And I always wondered why it got so much hate. There are some levels in this that are just so brutal for no reason other than poor design, whether the design is with the 3D engine, where there's just no good camera angle, or the design is just in the puzzle platforming, specifically like the pachinko machine optional level where you're in a giant pachinko machine and you have to get all the red coins. And if you do it wrong, you fall down and die. You don't start over. You literally fall down a hole and die. And so I would, this is a very good game, but I would agree with people that it's probably the weakest out of all the 3D Mario games I've played. I still think it's definitely worth playing. I'm glad I played it. I'm going to finish it very soon. It would be done, but East 9 arrived in the mail. So I think it also gets downgraded for me because I've already played Mario Odyssey. And Mario Odyssey, I think, is going to be a hard game to follow up. It is like the ultimate Mario 3D game. I just think it's just an incredible game and on every level. And so, A, I don't know how Mario Sunshine could live up to that, you know, since I played Mario Sunshine after. And also, I don't know how they're going to release a follow-up to Mario Odyssey other than if they do a sequel or something. Yeah, I'm trying to think if there's anything in this I'm missing. It's the music is pretty good. I wouldn't call it it's definitely not the best in the series. Yeah, definitely worth a play. I played it on the Switch on the 3D All-Stars. There's only one quality of life upgrade where you can invert the camera with the stick. Yeah. I know your daughter's been playing this one, so you haven't gotten to it yet.
I've not. Yeah. She, my youngest kid was, had finished Mario Odyssey a little while ago and saw that I got this collection and then ran off with it. And I don't
know. Has she given you any feedback on it?
She liked Mario Odyssey a lot. Was not a huge fan of Mario Sunshine. Maybe liked Galaxy better.
Okay. Yeah, I'm interested to see how. I haven't played Galaxy yet on the Switch. I'll be interested to see how they pulled all that off without having a Wii remote. Wiimote, whatever you call them.
Yeah. It's probably better.
It might be. I actually got in the mail yesterday that 3D Mario Land plus Bowser's Fury. So.
Yeah, I got that too. It's also going to be waiting for a while, I'm afraid.
Yep.
I played that. And the thing is, I played that on Wii U not that long ago. It's a really, really good game. It's maybe my favorite of the 3D Mario games.
What I've read, because I haven't played Mario 3D World. Is that what it's called? 3D World?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I played whatever the one is on 3DS, but. The Wii U is the only Nintendo system I haven't owned, so I did not play it. And I'm a big fan of Wii U games coming to the Switch, but I've heard more than one person say they hope Bowser's Fury is the future of Mario. That's how much people like it. So, so if any of our listeners have played any of these games or have any cool projects or news, Kickstarters, any retro things they just want to talk about, please email us. Email at retrogameclub.net. What game are you going to play next?
I'm going to go with Where in the World is Carmen Sandiego?
How are you going to play it?
Well, I have the Target handheld version of Where in the World is Carmen Sandiego.
Nice.
I may try it. There is a PC Engine version that I believe has English as an option. Hmm. And I own, I own a physical copy of that because I'm a weirdo. But I also own, I didn't even realize I owned this. I have the Sega Master System version as well.
Wow. Where did you pick that up?
I don't know. I didn't even know. I have no recollection of buying it. So maybe it was with some other games. Maybe I was at Midwest Gaming Classic and I said, oh, Carmen Sandiego on Master System. And I just bought it and I bought a bunch of other stuff that weekend and didn't remember. But that's one. That one does not come with the giant guidebook. So I also have the NES version. No, I've Where in Time is Carmen Sandiego for the NES. I'm sorry. That's a different game altogether.
Yeah, yeah.
And that has like a giant novel that comes with it of like, you know, history facts and stuff. And I don't think any of the Where in the Worlds have an equivalent to that. I think maybe it was just Where in Time that did the giant book. But there's 100 different ways to play that game. So
yeah, absolutely.
It's not even an exaggeration. There's got to be 100 different ports of it.
I'm going to do Dig Dug.
All right.
So
Dig Dug was on my list of games to talk about someday, too. And it's one of my favorite arcade games.
Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, like I said, email at retrogameclub.net or hit us up on Facebook, facebook.retrogameclub.net or Twitter at RGC Podcast. We'd love to hear from you. It's why we do this podcast, so we can, just talk about retro stuff because we don't have many people we could talk to it about, and B, for people to give us feedback. And, we have a few emails here this week. I'll take this first one.
But hold on real quick. Do you count Dig Dug Arrangement as Dig Dug, or is you counting that as a completely separate game?
I don't know.
I mean, it's not the same game as Dig Dug. Have you played Dig Dug Arrangement?
No, but I'm going to have to now.
Okay.
So, yeah.
You probably have it. It's on Namco Museum, and you probably have two or three copies of Namco Museum.
But yeah, Eric from the Pacific Northwest writes us. He lists some questions we're asking about. A question from a few shows ago about what Qbert was saying. And he thinks he's swearing and he's angry that the player didn't make it further. That's probably pretty accurate. And then on social media, he saw the Dig was mentioned. And he enjoyed Dig back in the 90s. He had to use a guide and found it was easier than Fate of Atlantis. And I really... really want to play Fate of Atlantis again. And he actually owned the big box copy of the Dig. It's only missing a few things, but he got it from an estate sale in like 2018, where he also got Fate of Atlantis and a few Monkey Island games. And he'll have to send pics of a write-up he did for the boxed Commodore games, retro PC games, and a ton of nerd swag from the 80s. And yes, please send those, Eric. And, thank you for that email. Hope to hear from you again soon.
Let's see. Majors writes in, notices that we have new intro music.
Yes.
We have new intro music?
Yeah. Remember last episode?
Well, we talked about this. Yeah. I said, don't get us taken down by Spotify. I think was all. Every now and then.
Yeah.
If you use commercial music, sometimes Spotify flips out about that, but... there's only like 3 video game albums on all of Spotify, it seems. just to, you know, freshen things up a little bit. He also hopes that the 5200 carts found a good home. They did not, because as I predicted, nobody wants 5200 carts. That's why they're so cheap on eBay. Mm-hmm. I think anybody who wants to collect the 5200 has at this point.
Yeah.
So I don't know what I'm going to do with these cartridges. They are taking up a lot of space. Last Starfighter game reminded him of the Cloak and Dagger game, which they also had planned a 5200 port of. Yeah, right, because if in the movie they were running a PC game, Atari, whatever the latest Atari PC was at the time, XE or something. It's probably not the XE, but whatever the latest Atari computer was is what they were running that game on.
But
and they did not, in fact, ever release it on the 5200.
So when I was a kid, we drove down from Detroit to Tampa, Florida a few times to this motel on the beach, and they had a mini arcade there. And the two best games they had in there were Cloak and Dagger and Tron. And when I started retro collecting again, I really was looking for Cloak and Dagger, and it's a really difficult cabinet to find. And it hasn't really been ported to anything. So I finally, it's a Defender conversion. Well, it's...
Yeah, I'm looking at the cabinet right now. That is 100% a Defender conversion. Yeah,
it's a little bit more complicated than that. But anyway, I was able to find a broken Defender. I found a Cloak and Dagger PC board. I was able to find the correct control panel for it. And there's a very cool guy that does, his site is This Old Game, and he does side art for cabinets. And so I was able to build a Cloak and Dagger cabinet, and I traded it a few years ago, but it's a very, very good game. It's definitely going to be a Game Club game eventually. I have fond memories of that, but sorry, tangent there.
It's a bit like a Tron game itself, because you're like doing different things, right?
You're moving up in an elevator. It's a dual stick game, almost like Robotron.
Okay. I thought it was, I thought it was like there were different types of stages.
There's stages with conveyor belts and stuff like that, but most of it's very Robotron-like with, I guess, obstacles in there. And it's timed as well. Yeah. Very good game.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever seen it in person. Maybe I saw it on like Starcade or something. It's, was that on Starcade?
I don't remember.
Is there a Pluto TV station that's just Starcade? Because I would just leave that running 24 hours a day.
It's a very good game though. And, it did not make it to many arcades.
Does not appear that it was ever on Starcade. That is such a huge letdown. okay, there's still more stuff in the email. We got Genesis Reset Button used in game. The first X-Men game was one that used it. Thanks for bringing that up because I forgot what game it was. I thought there was like an RPG that might have used it too, but I'm probably mistaken. Again, if you wanted to make like the world's worst fighting game for the Genesis, you could have the Reset Button used as a special move.
Yeah.
Like what's his finish him? You hit Reset or something. You know, like... He had a buddy who owned a Super Nintendo copier called the Doctor Something, which I think we didn't talk about this one.
I forget which
one. Yeah, I don't know where you would get a Super Nintendo copier in the U.S. I've never seen one in a store. And then you mentioned going on IRC and BBSs to get ROMs, and surprised you didn't mention Usenet, which is back where in the early 2000s you could get Dreamcast ISOs.
Oh yeah, that definitely happened.
yeah, Usenet had everything, and there was some time where like internet providers didn't catch on to like that Usenet was mostly just used for piracy at that point. Because I remember when like I had Comcast and they rolled out some change to like limit how much Usenet you could download per day. They started capping Usenet.
That's ridiculous.
I assume because it was mostly used for massive piracy.
Yeah.
he played the MSX version of Qbert, and he said it takes a lot of liberties with the original arcade version, and it's almost more of a sequel than a port. The main character is modified, and the triangle board layout is altered to fit a horizontal TV. The gameplay is more of a hunt to find the specific hidden squares that need to be jumped on rather than jumping on all of them. Yeah, that is not the same game at all.
No.
social media question. We asked listeners what they named their save files. He's been using WDC if he does not use his name. Is that a reference to something?
Not that I know of.
I'm missing something obvious. And then a side story of selling Chrono Trigger at Babbage's. I mentioned selling Chrono Trigger at retail. He also sold at Babbage's. And it sounds like Babbage's did the same thing we did, where they would, you know, the boxes on the wall were actual, like, they weren't live copies of the game. You would take the game out and then shrink wrap the box and put the box on the wall. That's what you did for theft prevention back in the day. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, then employees would sometimes play the copies that had been opened. And he made the mistake of lending it to a friend who did not delete his save file before returning it to the store. So when someone bought that copy, he had to explain to the customer why there was already a save file on there.
Nice.
Yeah. Yeah, that was, we definitely were careful about that rule. And yes, back in the day, people did play the games. We definitely opened the games and played them. I mean, I remember the day the Sega CD launched, we unboxed one of the Sega CDs and played it on our store demo TV and then put it right back on the shelf.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Yep. Good times. We didn't have to do that with the 3DO because 3DO sent us a demo system with like a hooked up to a TV and everything.
Oh yeah. I think so you've mentioned that before. Yeah.
Yeah. Big. It took a long time for us to find a game that anybody was remotely interested in playing on the 3DO. Like that was the challenge. Finally, we ended up just leaving Madden Football in it for like months.
It had a good.
That was the only
fighter.
Thing that drew people in. Street Fighter was a later release, and the demo unit only had a 3-button controller.
Gex? I guess that was good on it, right?
Gex was in there. We definitely did Gex. Mm-hmm. Gex was there for a while, but again, the thing with Gex is, like, he has like his 3 or 4 catchphrases. And after you hear them for the 1,000,000th time, you know, you're done.
Yeah.
So Gex did not last long. Madden Football doesn't have music, really. You know, it's not annoying to the people working at the store.
Yeah, yeah. In fact, it'd be fun for the people working the store, because if you take a break, that may be fun just to play an inning or two.
There's no chance I'm touching that controller.
Oh, true. Yeah.
This is pre-coronavirus, of course. but we had other viruses in the 90s. It was possible to catch like other diseases in the past. And at least on one occasion, I saw a kid just walk up to the controller and sneeze directly on it.
Yeah. That must have been a daily event.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And I said, well, I am never going to play that. And no, we did not clean it very often.
Ew.
We also had a demo Virtual Boy that you would just put your whole face in. I mean, think about that. Like, how absurd is that today?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Just jam your face in this thing that these guys making $5 an hour will never clean.
Ew. Yeah. Ew. Just the grease on that alone. Oh.
Yeah.
Anyway.
All right. We got one more email.
Yeah, I'll take this one. It's actually Zach. So, yeah. You know, first I'd like to say thanks to Zach for doing all that social stuff and now doing music stuff.
Yes.
And he also, I guess every once in a while we'll have segments in the show where that he'll clip up the audio and delete all our ums and uhs and put that out there as well. So thank you so much, Zach. I know you're a busy individual, so it means a lot. He's already talking about Dig Dug, even though it's next episode, which is cool. He played a few ports that were available on archive.org, and he was surprised that the arcade version wasn't on there. He found the 8-bit Atari port, and it played pretty well. As a kid, he played it on Apple II and found the port didn't quite live up to what his memory of it was. All in all, it's a fun little game, and he loves it. You literally blow up the enemies, and yeah.
I wonder if there is more than one Apple II port. I wonder if that's the problem.
I think there was a 2GS port that was highly upgraded. If memory serves, there were a few arcade ports just for the 2GS.
Yeah, I think in that era you could occasionally get more than one. Like it would be ported, and then like a couple of years later, it would just be out again, but it was different.
That sounds about right. Doodle World, he completed. But he used a lot of the rewind features because he played the a ROM of it that he got legally from Nate. He did not pirate. he intends to get it on the Switch when it's available, which I did not know that was going to happen. So that's really cool. And yeah, the art is adorable. He has kids that love to draw stuff, so it really really hit home for him. The enemies are well done. He appreciates. The characters like the sharpened pencils and the thumbtacks. And he especially likes the design of the ruler like inchworm and the pencil sharpener that shoots out sharpened pencils like Bullet Bill.
Yeah, I forgot to mention that. That was pretty funny first time I saw it.
And Yeah, yeah. Just a lot of good stuff to talk. A lot of good feedback on the game. Very Mario style like mechanic. No power ups. The character's hitbox is really forgivable. The difficulty increases appropriately. You know, the kid mode as well, where there's no real pits, or and you get extra guys as well. The fact that you play the ROM on an emulator, you know, there might be a few hiccups that, like a few little bugs that came from that. And that does remind me, I think I did find a bug or two where, what are the items you're collecting right now? It's been a week since I played this.
The crayons?
Yeah, yeah.
There was one case where I collected a crayon, but it didn't disappear. I saw that like one time.
There were a few times where I could not collect the crayon. I would just jump in front of it and it wouldn't happen.
Oh, I think it counted, but it didn't. Maybe I got it wrong then. I thought it counted it, but it didn't disappear is what I saw.
Okay.
It was pretty rare. And then sometimes, like, I don't know if it's a, that's part, like, I don't know if it's, I don't know if it was a bug or not, but sometimes the enemy AI gets a little weird. Like, the enemies will kind of get, not stuck, but like, you know, like in Mario, they go left and right across the whole platform, and sometimes they'll stop kind of at the edge of the platform and take like a shorter left, right. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I did not see that. Thing. Yeah, I did.
Yeah, but I'm wondering if that's, so if we get Nate on again, like, I'm wondering if that's on purpose, like you're, like they're trying to keep the enemy closer to you and actually make it a little, you know, a little trickier to get across.
Yeah. Nate, at the very least, write into us. We'll read, we could have a Q&A for Doodle World. Yeah.
But I mean, yeah, it's actually a really well designed game.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's really what Zach's getting at too, where, you know, it really, fills the Mario nostalgia too. It feels a lot like the Mario physics. And that was actually one of his criticisms that he actually blames on himself, where when you get the invincibility, it's not the exact time length as Super Mario Brothers. And so he always, and I did the same thing where you kind of mistime it at the end when you're not invincible anymore. Oh, it's a nice PDF it comes with, the kids mode again, a really cool custom font, and the music, again, is really good. Overall, just a great game, and for $10, it's just a no-brainer. You know, you could easily spend more at Starbucks in a morning on pretty much nothing, or you could get this incredible game. So, yeah, Zach, thank you so much. And Nate, thank you so much for making that game. It's really fun to play.
Yeah.
All right. What else do we have here?
I was busy trying to see if there's a way to get Starcade on like Kodi or whatever. Streaming Starcade 24 hours a day. That's all I want out of life now.
That's your retirement.
Yeah. So on social media, Zach asked and also answered, and so did others, about creating your own game as a kid. Zach mentions that he would use graph paper to figure out hex codes to design custom characters for a TI-99, which you could then draw in BASIC using a call character command, which I haven't coded TI-99 BASIC, or if I have, it's been so long ago, I don't remember how it works. Mm-hmm. And they'd also map out, like, Apple II low-res graphics. He's positive that somewhere in his parents' basement, there's a box with stacks and stacks of these pages. And probably some cassettes and floppies with the start of them. None of those work anymore, so you don't have to worry about them being embarrassed. But the embarrassment of someone finding your old... Actually, when I was going... Because you spend a lot of time cleaning, you know, between winter and quarantine. Mm-hmm. And I found, like... You know, I'm a full-grown adult at this point in life. A map I made of Wind Waker. Like, you know, Wind Waker basically has a grid system. Mm-hmm. And in each grid, each spot on the Wind Waker map, each grid, there's usually, like, a fish you can feed. And, like, there's a check, like, there's, like, three things you can do on every grid in Wind Waker. You've played Wind Waker, I assume.
Oh, yeah.
So I actually made, like, the grid and, like, was marking off the what I'd completed and what I had in each space.
Nice.
And that was just in a random stack of papers I had laying here. A couple other responses on the social media. Yeah, a lot of people still do, you know, a lot of people have said they did doodle a few things. They said it's a lot easier for kids today because you have a lot of tools. And of course, someone sends a link to a NES homebrew called Kubo 3. And I'll have to check that out. Maybe we can get that in the notes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Nate, of course, mentions designing Super Mario levels on paper with friends. And they would show them to each other at school, which is pretty cool. Someone else who made basic programs use a lot of graph paper, but never merged the two together. Most graphing paper was just used for doodling like 8-bit ideas or doing like D&D maps. Uh-huh. Another one here. Someone made a terrible RPG Maker game about Atlantis for a contest in EGM. He never even played it. Is this your adventure?
Yeah, so...
Is this you?
Yeah, okay. So I have my own answer here. When I was like 10 years old, in Turbo Pascal 7, I was playing a lot of MUDs back then, so in Turbo Pascal 7, I wrote kind of a... I guess you would call it a MUD maker. So with this application, you could create text files that it would then put in an array, like a grid, and... you know, like the first line of the text file would be in where in the grid this room or area on the map should be. You know, the second line would be the directions you could move from it. So north, south, east, west, whatever. And then the description and you know, monsters could walk in and out and stuff like that, that you'd have to battle. And it actually worked. It was very inefficient, but I didn't know that back then. And yeah, so that's not graph paper, but that's how I taught myself Pascal back in the day. But yeah, that was a fun question to answer.
Is this from last episode? Super Mario World made Mario Who You Say. We got a comment about Super Mario and about the ad blitz around Super Mario 3. You know, the marketing blitz that included, you know, a TV series and a movie, right?
Oh, yeah, this was from that article where they claim Super Mario World made him who he is today.
Yeah, and he's basically saying, no, I mean, Mario 3 is when, like, he was only vaguely aware of Mario up until then. But with Mario 3, suddenly now, like, the whole world knew about it. Yeah. And I think that's, I mean, Mario 3 was, like, that was, I guess Mario was not a mainstream character. I mean, people, like, Donkey Kong... people knew it. I don't know if they knew the character was named Mario in there. And Super Mario Brothers was, of course, a big deal. But I agree with the point that, like, Mario 3 was the first, like, big, big blitz.
I mean, it even had the movie, The Wizard, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I know there was a cartoon series, because for whatever reason, I owned the DVD set of the Super Mario 3 cartoon.
Nice.
And I don't remember if that was, like, the same time as Mario 3 or, like, a year or two later. Because I never remember seeing it on TV.
I remember...
Did you ever see the Mario 3 cartoon on TV?
No, I saw the Mario World type one, and then I saw the Captain Louie one. But I think those were the only two I saw.
Yeah, yeah, the Super Mario Super Show you're thinking of, right?
Yes.
Which was before Mario 3, because it kind of takes place in like the world of Mario 2, which is a dream world. Making it even a more confusing.
And then with the Zelda Fridays, which are now... our first item, which was the Zelda Beavis and Butthead.
Yeah, I have the box set of that, too. In fact, I think I might rip that today to put it on this Raspberry Pi I've been messing with.
Nice. Cool.
I had a Raspberry Pi XMBC machine before, and then I got rid of it, and now I've decided that's what I'm going to create.
Nice. Cool. All right. I think that pretty much wraps it up, so... yeah, that was a fun episode.
Yeah, yeah. So thanks for listening, everyone.